Welcome to College Volleyball Weekly on VolleyballMag.com, powered by P1440. Thanks for clicking or tapping in. Now here's your host, Rob Espero, also known as Rob on the Mic.
Hey, guys at College Volleyball Weekly. I don't want to say it's going to be the last gathering here between the group this year, but we had a lot of stuff happen this week, and we've got Jay Hossack of George Mason University, and we've got Dan Fran of Lewis University. Already making commercial plugs. This one's going to go off the... They already went off the rails fast. So, obviously, with this truncated schedule during just a crazy week 11, and we'll go to a quick timeline. I'll mention it. Mainly, March 8th, it started with Harvard canceling travel for spring sports teams. March 11th, then the Ivy League followed suit, canceling all athletic events. March 12th, the Big West Conference announced the cancellation of all competition. March 13th, NCAA cancels all championships. March 13th, again, FIVB postpones Volleyball Nations League until after the 2000 Olympics. And then March 14th, FIVB also cancels Cancun and Coolangatta, the beach events. However, on March 14th, NCAA made a ruling to grant another year of eligibility for its spring athletes. So due to the coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever you want to call it, it's made some really, really intense change for unprecedented times. So, you know, I'm thankful that Jay and Dan are still able to join me here on College Volleyball Weekly, and hopefully we can keep some kind of entertainment while we're waiting for more volleyball to come our way. So,
hey, why wouldn't we be here? We got nothing else to do.
I've already wiped down my office. I'm good. You know what I mean? It's all clean.
And you wiped down your face, apparently.
Exactly. Cut his hair.
Cut my hair, shaved my beard off, less things to grab onto. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
So. Nice. So let's just start. There were a few matches last week in week 11. Let's talk about the ones that caught your eyes. We'll start with Jay.
Yeah, obviously the San Diego Penn State match caught my eye for a number of reasons. I think it was one of the only last matches that was played. And obviously Penn State's in the IBA, and I wanted to see how they would do against a really hot team right now in San Diego. I think, you know, Penn State probably didn't play to the best of their ability that night. They went through a number of different guys in their lineup, getting some guys that maybe weren't seeing much playing time this year and seeing if they could spark a little bit of camaraderie with the guys on the court. But, you know, San Diego just looks steady and solid, and Macaulay again just, you know, doing some really nice things. So I wish we could have seen how far San Diego could have gone this year. And just, you know, Kevin Ring has done such a fantastic job with what he's been given over the years. And again, he would have been my call for a Coach of the Year award for sure. But, you know, regardless of that, that's what I watched. You know, and I don't know if they found out beforehand that the rest of the season was going to be kind of canceled and they maybe just played half speed just to kind of go through it, or if that was a moment in time when they weren't aware of anything and they were playing really hard. But it just looked like Penn State lost a gear, and it looked like San Diego just kept their foot down the whole time.
Yeah. Well, they definitely, Kyle McCauley led the way, 13 kills, 333, three blocks, as two digs, and Colin Shannon chipped into the effort, 16, 364. Five digs, and you know, Brett Wildman, 10 Ks for the Nittany Lions, led the way for them. Dan, obviously, you're up next. What did you catch last week that really caught your eye?
Well, the other match was Concordia versus SC was on Wednesday, I think, because their Thursday match versus Jamestown was canceled for Concordia. And then Concordia won that 17-15 to kind of wrap up. Really, I think, was one of the last matches of the year in that sense. And so, and we certainly saw Concordia play some great volleyball versus some teams. And SC was gaining a little bit of ground. They were starting to play a little bit better towards the end there in terms of just, you know, as a unit and getting a little bit better. I think Jordan Hoppe and Raymond Barsimian led Concordia with 21 and 16 kills. And, you know, certainly both talented players for those guys. And Brandon Browning had 17 kills for USC. And so I think, you know, last match of the year, and Patchell's group gets a win. So congrats to those guys. And certainly I watched the stats on the San Diego-Penn State game, and San Diego certainly put a remarkable year together, and they were fun to watch. We got to play them early and got an early victory on them, but they were certainly a very talented team, and Kyle McCauley was a really great player, and their center was doing some great things, and Ring had a special group with that those guys. And so, certainly a couple good matches to wrap up what we would call a shortened season for everyone so far.
Yes. Well, the season obviously ended on Thursday night after those matches. And after play, just some of the conference updates. In the Conference Carolinas, you have Barton, you know, on the top of that conference, 8-0 with 13-2 overall, with King right behind them, 7-2. The MIVA, gotta love the Dan Friend's Mighty Flyers, 6-1 on top of the great 15-4 record. Lindenwood, shockingly, up right there, up top, right behind them at 4-2 and 11-8 overall. And the EIVA, Penn State, undefeated at 7-0 and 11-8 overall. Princeton right there behind them at 7-2. And we got to mention George Mason because they're right there in the mix at 5-3 and 10-7 overall. And for recruiting purposes, we definitely need to mention them too. And then, like, it's frozen on that logo for me.
Oh, that's great. There you go.
Good timing.
And then the MPSF, BYU, 6-0, 17-1 overall. Grand Canyon right behind them, 4-2 and 14-7 overall. And the Big West, I know you guys have your thoughts, and I'm going to reserve them till after I finish. UC Santa Barbara, 1-0, 14-2 overall. UC San Diego right behind them, 2-1 and 13-15 overall. Hawaii, 0-0, three-way tie for third place. And then UC Irvine at the bottom, 0-2. So, all right, let her rip on the Big West Conference.
well, here's my thought. Why is San Diego not number one with two wins? Why is everybody else with one win and still in first and then tied for third place? That's ridiculous. I don't understand how that works. I know they have a loss, but they have more wins. The other thing, and I think Dan will probably piggyback on this, is, you know, with the limited amount of teams, obviously the Big West is got a smaller conference schedule than everybody else. But the real funny thing is everybody else in the country, some other conferences included, have all figured out a way to schedule conference matches before spring break. And unfortunately, the Big West has kind of slipped a little bit and not figured out that they might need to get some of those things done beforehand. But, you know, it's not our conference. I don't sit in the meetings. I know Dan doesn't sit in their meetings, and they don't call us to ask us for advice. But it'd be real nice if they can get some of those matches in beforehand, because then things like this happen, and now we're wondering, well, geez, who would have done what? But again, just speculation. That's the only thing I'm going to say about the Big West. It's obviously a very good conference. They've got a lot of good top teams in there, and it's unfortunate that they've only had five matches, I think, total for the entire conference up to this point. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I would just say, I think I've talked to a couple of the Big West coaches, and they want to move league play up, so hopefully they'll get that done. You know what I mean? I think getting at least some of the league games, if not close to that halfway point, because ultimately the other teams are at a halfway point. They're going to be looking for some non-conference matches in between the couple weeks, whether it's spring break or whatever, and so the Big West just falls into that same philosophy with everybody else. And whether there's a couple more teams in each conference or not, I think the Big West can get that done. Maybe they start 1 week later compared to us, but they've still got a few weeks where they can do that. And I think they'll head that way, and I hope so, at least from those couple conversations. But, you know, you never know. You got a bunch of teams that were on top, and you certainly didn't know what was going to happen to the Big West, but you were going to speculate that BYU was going to win the MPSF. You were going to speculate that Penn State was going to win. Barton was certainly in a good spot. You know, we were headed in a good spot, but there was still a lot of volleyball left to be played. Do you know what I mean? And we'll just never know. Do you know what I mean? And right. We were seeing right. A lot of good things happen and teams getting better. And there are a lot of young players across the board in the NCAA. We talked about this before.
Yep.
All-American seniors graduated. And so, you know, I think you were seeing a lot of those players get better and be able to kind of, you know, make impacts on their teams and see the improvements from those teams. And we've seen this happen before. I think it was a few years back where UCLA made a late run and won a national championship. Well, who's going to be that team? Who's going to be that?
Six. I was on the receiving end of that, and that was at Rec Hall.
Yeah. Who was going to put it together at the end and make a run? You know what I mean? And who's to say which exactly that team was? But especially when you're on the young years, that it tends to happen. And shoot, we may have super teams next year, how this all unfolds, and we'll talk about that later. So
yeah. Well, that's an excellent segue, because, you know, with the season being shortened, I wanted to put out to you guys, who were some of the players that stuck out that are all-conference or even all-American worthy that really grabbed your attention this year? I know that's an impromptu one I throw on you, but, like, so it gets you fresh out of thought there, so.
Well, Kyle McCauley at San Diego, guy jumps out first, you know what I mean? So a team makes an impact, and certainly he's got some players around him, like Connor Walbright, the setter, but he's the guy that jumps out that's like, hey, we played them early, so, wow, this team's going to be special, and you certainly saw him make week in and week out impacts with that team and really drive them going forward, and so that's the first guy. But outside of the norms, like you got Gabby at BYU, who's having a great year, and Stanley, who's setting that group, and you know, they're outside. Forgot his name.
Gardini.
Gardini, yeah, Gardini. You know, so you got the namesays that we knew. You know, Hawaii's got Rado and Patrick Gaspin, but McCauley's the one that jumps out to me. The two outsides from Grand Canyon, you know, certainly Janky jumps out, and who's
Gianni.
The other?
Kid? Gianni.
Camden Gianni jumps out. Both those guys jump out. Grand Canyon was making some waves this year with while they were playing. And so those would be our conference. Caleb Jennings at Ball State was doing some nice things. The young man from Loyola, Cole, I can't pronounce his last name, Schlauer. Schlauer. He was doing some nice things for them. We certainly had a couple guys off our program that were doing some great things for us this year.
I'll stay avoided in.
Okay.
Brian Coonan, Tom Jay, Tyler Mitchum, TJ Murray. Yeah. There you go. Because, I mean, legitimately, they performed well. And I got to see them firsthand a few times this season. So they definitely deserve mention. And particularly Coonan, he has been so hot for your team. And I knew you wouldn't say anything, so I was ready to load up on you as soon as.
Hey, your guy Static, though, was leading the country in blocks per game. He was having a phenomenal year blocking the ball, for sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Yep. So, but Jay, jump on to some of the ones that have caught your eye this season.
Yeah, I a lot of those are ones that I would mention as well. I mean, Kyle McCauley had just a fantastic year. Kid goes from Orange Coast College and all of a sudden goes to San Diego and just lights people up. So I really liked what he did. Obviously, Garcia is a no-brainer. The guy is a man amongst boys at certain times, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes pro pretty soon. But a couple of guys I think that maybe are not on the radar but should be. I thought Will Stanley did a fantastic job starting at BYU. I would love to see him on a team without some of those big names and see if he could still run an effective offense and be able to get some teams some wins. Imagine if he were at USC, or imagine if he were at Northridge, or imagine if he was at Irvine. You know, I know Irvine was lacking a little bit of a setter at some point this season. The things he could have done with those teams. And what if he was at Hawaii? What if he stayed back at home? I mean, that would have been an unreal team. So Will Stanley gets a big nod for me. I thought Brett Wildman at Penn State did a fantastic job. The kid's a sophomore, and he had some fantastic matches this year. Had a couple of sleepers where maybe he wasn't quite on 100%, but the scary thing is, if he gets another year of eligibility and he gets that redshirt year without having to waste it, I'm going to have to see that guy for the next 3 years, and that's going to be a big pain in my butt. So I really liked what he was doing. I thought Mandalaris at Barton was a guy that stood out. He did some really nice things on the right side for them. I mentioned the match against Loyola where I believe 20 out of 22 sets went his way, and the guy just lit up USC. I thought another one was Raymond Barsimian and Jordan Hoppe at Concordia. I think they are two young men that I think are in their last year. I don't know if they're going to come back or not, but they really elevated Concordia to a level that I don't think a lot of people thought they were going to hit. And I thought those two guys were a main reason why they had such a good run this year. So, and I agree with him on the Grand Canyon guys. I thought Janky and Gianni did such a nice job. They were just hot teams throughout the course of this year, and those were all teams that were part of it at some point or another.
Well, one of the guys that I'm surprised none of you mentioned was Dan Njima, or Kofi, you know, of UCLA. Had a always consistent, but you know, even with the granting of the additional year of eligibility, there's been chatter that he may just leave and pursue music. So
he already did. He already did. He decided he's going to go to play music instead.
Yeah, already done. Yeah, I think it's tough. Like, I think he was hurt for a little bit, had the concussion. You know, he's certainly a special physical specimen, but I don't know that he had the overpowering effect that he did maybe the year before. Do you know what I mean? In terms of play. And so I'd have a hard time putting him in front of a handful of guys that we've already mentioned. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that.
Right. And it's tough to be an impact player like that as a middle blocker. I mean, I know he swung a little bit on the outside and a little bit from the right side. And he and George Heumann at Princeton were kind of running this. Yeah, I play middle, but I do a lot of other things. But I agree with Dan. I don't think UCLA had a great season. And I don't think one guy, especially in that position, who's out for three of the rotations, can have that big of an impact. And if you're going to mention another couple of small guys, Jimeno at NJIT and the opposite, yeah. I forgot his name, the freshman, the lefty. Those are two guys that elevated NJIT Meister, this year.
Julian Meister?
Yeah, I mean, that I'm going to see that kid in front of me for the next 4 years, so that's scary. But, you know, I mean, that's the cool thing about this year if we're going to take a silver lining. And there's a few, but if we're going to take something, some teams this year that weren't well-named programs or weren't ones that you would mention as a team that you need to really look out for really got a chance this year to step up. There were some young guys and some guys that were older on other teams that really did help bring their program to national prominence, and that's a pretty cool thing to see.
Yep. The other guy that I feel like we need to mention, because he kind of came out of the blue, coming in as a setter, Santa Barbara's Randy DeWeese. You know, that program has been not shockingly successful, but, man, they are always in the mix, and people seem to just not give them as much of a look over as, like, let's say, Hawaii or Long Beach State, you know, or BYU, because they're not traditionally in the limelight as much as other programs are. But they are a fun team to watch, and DeWeese is a good part of the reason why they were so fun to watch.
Well, and DeWeese is a converted setter. He used to be the setter and now is an outside hitter. And you got Casey McGarry, who's the setter, who's 6 foot only on a good day with shoes on. The fun thing about Santa Barbara is you had DeWeese and you had Wilcox, two really different styles of play, where DeWeese was kind of going up and banging high and heavy. And then you had Wilcox, who was just kind of slicing and dicing and chopping balls here and there. And you had a really fast offense. Santa Barbara was so fun to watch. They were smaller than most teams, but they were quick, fast, and efficient. And that was really fun to watch.
Yeah. You know, actually, Dan alluded to it probably just a few moments ago in regards to trying to determine a national champion. I think it would be so difficult, particularly in this year, because even from the get-go, we've said this season, there is talent across the nation. And there are teams that can turn it on and beat you at the right moment. And I really felt like this was the year, that even though there were two standout teams with great records, I feel like there are other teams, like Dan, your team was super physical. And when they were on, they were unstoppable. Jay, when you were fully healthy, I think you got down to a roster of three. So you're competing on Craigslist. I mean, you guys were doing some really good things. And I know Irvine had been struggling too with some injuries and some. So, you know, from a geocentric standpoint, we knew our teams had the potential, but even other areas had the ability and the talent and the coaching to upset some people.
Yeah, I just don't think there was this big separation from, I know BYU and Hawaii had certainly these records that were like, hey, until the split, they were both undefeated, but they both went four at our house. You know what I mean? We had a freshman setter and a freshman libero. Do you know what I mean? Yep. And I think there isn't that much separation where maybe you would have got down to the end of the last seven teams or six teams or whatever. And you know how that goes. You just got to be good that week or those few days. You know, San Diego could have been in that mix. Long Beach could have been in that mix. Santa Barbara was certainly good enough to win a national championship. And so I can't sit there and say, oh, hey, BYU is going to win this. I don't think that's right to say. Do you know what I mean? I think you had a lot of teams that were in the hunt at the end going, hey, I'm going to make a run at this and I can be pretty good. And so, you know, unfortunate, yeah. And we'll always have to just be able to speculate. But certainly had a lot of good volleyball going on. So,
yeah.
I would agree with that. And I think Penn State could have probably gotten hot at the right moment when they were firing on all cylinders. They were really good. I think Dan's right. I think, you know, the obvious top two teams that everybody talks about with Hawaii and BYU were probably had better odds. But you had teams like Lewis, Santa Barbara. You had San Diego, Penn State. There's just a handful of teams that, you know, if they would have got hot at the right time of the year, who knows what they could have done. And there's probably another two or three teams that maybe could have gone deep into the tourney at least in their conference tourneys, and that could have messed a few things up. So, you know, Grand Canyon could have upset a couple of teams, and I think Irvine, had they figured some things out like they were doing recently, could have probably beaten a couple of teams. I mean, if they were to see in Long Beach or maybe Hawaii at the wrong times, that could have really screwed some things up for the at-large bid. So, yeah, I think it's unfortunate. This is one of those years, and I think Dan will probably agree with this. You know, you call a timeout. You got a defensive blocking scheme going on, and you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see this come to fruition. And then your server misses the ball in the net. You're kind of like, no, I'm never going to see it again. So, you know, I think to me kind of exemplifies what this season is to me, is just a missed opportunity to see what could have been.
Well, see, I get to sit from the perspective of almost not necessarily a staff perspective, but, you know, I get to chat with some of the coaches and hearing them strategize, like, okay, I know where they're beatable. Finding these chinks in the armor and them putting a plan into execution and seeing it work is pretty freaking amazing. And I know that the knowledge of the coaching staffs, I mean, it's valuable if the players can execute it. And I know that the coaches that I've been speaking with, including you guys, are the level that can implement a plan, execute it, and then pull off some big things. So that's the part of the game that a lot of people don't get to see. And I get to hear that chatter going on, and it's amazing. You know, a coach recently, I'm not going to say who, said that, oh, I was watching that BYU match. I know where we can beat them.
You know, so, did that coach beat them?
They went five with them. But I think I may just gave it up right there. So, because they're the only team that went five with them, I believe, except for Hawaii. Yeah. It's a non-Hawaii team that went five with them. So, but I mean, I don't want to say it's cockiness. It's a sweat, but it's just a confidence in your plan, your knowledge, your skill set, and then the resources you have. And it's cool seeing that being implemented. I mean, because even in Sean Olmstead's crew, you know, he had a plan, and watching that plan unfold, you know, give it to Gabby, give it to Davide. It's flawless. But you know what? They're going to get tired, and you can find a weak spot. Someone can't pass over the left shoulder. Someone's going to, like, exploit it, you know? So,
yeah. So. Very true. Very true.
But, yeah, the season would have been hard to predict in my eyes. I've known from the time I've been watching the national championships that it comes to that tournament run. You could be undefeated. I learned the first year Irvine made that run in 2006, we were at 22-0, and then all of a sudden things just kind of fell off the rails.
Yep. I remember that year.
So with that, let's take a little break here with our College Volleyball Weekly crew. Guys from College Volleyball Weekly back again. We wanted to touch up on the 2020 season, as short as it was, but a lot of good stuff happened, and we want to recognize some teams that really caught our eyes and just jumped into the limelight this year. Who wants to start off?
All right, I'll start.
I'll start. I think I think the two teams that surprised me the most this year, good-wise, one was San Diego. I thought the addition of McCauley did such a nice job, and Ring finally has some pieces he can work with. I thought NJIT made a couple of nice jumps this year. They beat a couple of bigger teams that are known. You know, Jimeno and their other opposite did such a nice job, and Roque running their offense. I think some teams that it had hot moments, and I think Santa Barbara is one of them, but that was for the entire season. But some teams that had some hot moments that could have done some good things, Grand Canyon, Lindenwood, and Barton were three teams that I thought did a really nice job this year. Not necessarily just surprising people, but building their programs the right way and getting some good wins and putting their name on the map.
Yeah. I mean, certainly San Diego jumps out as well. So I certainly thought they did a nice job. I said within our conference, Jay mentioned Lindenwood. I thought those guys were doing some really good things this year with a young group, a couple of young outsides. McKendree, I had started off pretty well, had an injury to their setter, so I think they were going to be in a good spot. He was probably going to be back eventually, and they had a freshman guy that had stepped in for him. So I thought McKendree, ultimately, they were, you know, towards the top of our league. And, you know, Ball State at the same time had won at Loyola for the first time since 99 or something like that. So we had some teams in our conference that were making some moves. Certainly thought, you know, Penn State and NJIT was the one team out of that conference. We knew Penn State and Princeton were going to be good, but you know, Penn State bouncing back from the year before and really kind of, you know, with a couple players establishing themselves as a dominant conference opponent was pretty good. Barton, for sure. And then Mount Olive out of that conference had made a nice charge and were doing some nice things. Had a couple good wins, and I think we're towards the top of conference as well. And then I think outside of that, on top of what Jay mentioned, you had Concordia, who certainly had some wins that were doing some good things with a couple outsides with Hoppy and Raymond Barsimian that were competing well at the same time. And so, yeah, certainly some teams and players that were catching our eye as the season was moving along.
Yeah.
I'll have to jump in there and just add that. I mean, you definitely, I agree with all of what you guys have said. But the first year programs that started this year, St. Francis, Brooklyn, Tusculum, and you know, all the other ones that have come into existence this year and are going through their first or second season. Unfortunate that things turned out the way they did, but you know, it's great to see more men's programs coming on to compete at the NCAA level. So with that, how about, I know we kind of mentioned it, but who would be Coach of the Year candidates for the coaches?
Kevin Ring.
Kevin Ring. Without question, Kevin Ring.
Kevin Ring.
Kevin Ring.
I think Sean Olmstead's got to be up there, of course. You know what I mean? Those guys were playing some great volleyball at a high level. Do you know what I mean? So I certainly think he would be another guy that I would throw out there. But, I mean, and then outside of that, Danny Conclaves at NJIT. He's another guy with a group that was doing some pretty nice things in terms of where they were at.
Yeah, Goncalves, Danny Goncalves did a nice job in NJIT. Olmstead, I mean, obviously you can't take away from the fact that his team was just dominant in all factors. But I will defer to Kevin Ring for that honor, only because Kevin Ring doesn't have those monsters on his team, and he's still beating a lot of teams around the country. It's easy, and I say that with relative, you know, deference to him that, you know, when you got big players, you should win. And Olmstead put together and recruited a great class, and they obviously are doing great things. So I don't take anything away from him from that. But I think Kevin Ring should be the guy that gets that nod if there was one being given out this year. What about teams? What about teams that maybe didn't have a great year?
Oh.
That's some surprises.
Well, USC jumps out, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think you could say Loyola, but Loyola had the injury to their setter, Zolik, do you know what I mean? Yep. So you kind of knew things, and they had a lot of young guys, so it wasn't unexpected necessarily, do you know what I mean? So we knew Ohio State had a new coach, and they started off on fire. I think they were 7-0 or 6-0, and I think they got in the conference play and dropped a couple, won a couple, and so those are a few for me. UCLA. I mean, you saw UCLA kind of go the other direction to start off the year, and hundreds of different people were playing in lineups, and so they were trying to figure out what was going on. So that would be a couple of mine. So
I'll tell you a team that hasn't got mentioned a lot right now, and that's Long Beach State, and they're going to finish this year with a 10-1 record. Yeah. So, you know, good things are happening there, and my guess is there's a philosophy to get confidence in the guys early on and build that through the season, through conference play. Unfortunately, our conference, since it started so late, it didn't get to happen. But 10-1 is a pretty impressive record, considering that the spotlight was taken by BYU, Hawaii, and UC Santa Barbara. So I wonder, because how good is the Long Beach State team? Yeah, the 10-1 record, and there's some solid pieces there too.
Hey, do you think the NCAA RPI comes out? Like, they were going to do an RPI. You know what I mean? It was supposed to come out here in the next week. Oh. And I'm just curious. We talk about, like, some of the records or where teams are at, and I don't know how all these numbers fall in, but I'd like to see the RPI. I'd be curious where it was at with everybody at, considering where their records are at and all that stuff. So.
Well, and the bummer is you're never going to get a chance to see if there was a three-peat. That's the bummer, too.
Right.
Long Beach, 10-1 record. Who knows what they could have done. I think the teams for me that kind of surprised me, Northridge – normally a very traditionally strong program. You know, they lose Dimitar Kelchev and maybe a couple other players, and I'm not sure what happened, but they kind of fell off the face of the map. And maybe they're young. I know they got a couple of young guys in there, but they're not all young. And so I just wonder what happened over there. Obviously, USC, You know, Jeff is trying to build that program and change the culture a little bit. And there's some turmoil going on in the USA athletic department, which doesn't necessarily affect him very much because it's not any of his responsibility, but makes you wonder what's going on over there and how much longer Jeff's going to be able to be able to build that culture the way he wants. I hope he gets as long as he needs. Hear that, USC administration? Leave him there. He's doing good things. He'll build that program back up. I'm not concerned, but UCLA is obviously on that map as well. What happened at UCLA this year that made them go away from some players that maybe were good producers at certain points? And they stuck with a really young crew, especially the setter, who everybody was talking about as not being as good as they all hoped it would be when coming out of the gates. And they wondered what was going on with some of these recent losses. I think the last one is Irvine, but Irvine made a turn there in a little bit in the middle part. But in the beginning of the year, they were struggling pretty mightily. And I think it would have been neat to see what Niffin's team could have done towards the end, because I think they figured a few things out.
Yeah, they're definitely a process team. And the lineup that played against Dan's team in Irvine – versus what they played the last few weeks is a little different, and it was significantly different, and it changed the outlook of the team, and they actually were playing with a lot more confidence. Now, Dan's team played awesome against us, hated every minute of it, but, you know, hey. And it was made for – but it just showed – it highlighted the talent that Dan's team has in Mitchum and, of course, Coonan and Bouge. And we always got to give a shout-out to T.J. Murray. I think it's funny they asked you to give him a shout-out. I'm always going to mention T.J. Murray now. there's so much talent out there, and you know, one of the things that really always shocks me is how an off-court injury due to some bad choices can really affect the season, and I think that's what happened to SC. I don't know if it's not necessarily a bad choice or just an accident of some kind, but you know, we, like Gassman said, when he had that skateboard injury, you know, he looks back and says, I wish I would have never done that. And I believe it was some kind of e-scooter type deal injury for
Those e-scooters, those things.
So, like that. I don't know. I may be wrong. I heard it somewhere, but it was an off-court injury. So with that, let's take a break, and we'll have our final segment of College Volleyball Weekly. All right. Welcome back to College Volleyball Weekly. And as you are aware, a lot of stuff is happening in the world, and it's unprecedented times with the coronavirus or COVID-19 that has broken out and has shut down pretty much any kind of social gathering of more than 50 people at this point, which means the shutdown of the volleyball seasons across the nation. NCAA men's and beach are no longer going on. So I wanted to get some coaches' responses, and I just happened to be blessed enough to have Jay Hosick of George Mason and Dan Friend of Lewis University able to kind of give us some insight as to what transpired last week when all the announcements started coming down. So I'm going to start bouncing the question off you guys, and just as you're led, answer and let us know what happened. So the first one for you guys is, as coaches, when you discover the cancellation of your seasons, what were your guys' initial thoughts?
You know, I think the challenge for us is, you know, we talked about, you know, building a team and building a season, and it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, you know, and you start these things, you really want to break it down to its absolute base. You start these when you recruit these kids from the beginning and they come in as freshmen, and every year in the fall, they're putting together these pieces. And so for some of these kids, it's their first year, and maybe it's not as big of an impact because they're still kind of figuring things out. The freshmen are, I don't want to say the lost ones, but, you know, they're kind of the kids that maybe don't understand how much it really takes to get to the top. It's the seniors and the fifth-year players that they really have put in the time and the energy. And there's a lot of teams this year that they had just had great years, and maybe their teams that maybe have not been historically very strong, and now all of a sudden they're having a great year, yeah. And they're never going to get a chance to see what that's going to end up like. And so I think that's the real bummer for me. And so when we heard about it, you know, I felt for everybody, obviously, but I really felt for my seniors. They're the ones who have put in all the time and have accomplished so many great things, and it's just such a bummer they won't get a chance to play it out.
Yeah. Yeah, overwhelming, I think. I think, you know, we were getting ready to go play a match against Loyola last Friday. and how the timeline kind of fell out and broke down. It was kind of like, hey, you were going to limit your fans. That was the first thing. Then it was like, hey, unfortunately, the match won't go on. Then it was like, hey, the NCAA has said no postseason championships. And so it was just kind of this trickle down. And then the MIVA said, hey, we're canceling the season and conference games and conference tournament. And then our school itself said, hey, we're just taking a break till April 6th. And so you had all this flood of information within 24 hours that I'm supposed to disseminate to my guys and my seniors. And like Jay said, all the work you've put in. And as a freshman, you don't get the whole scope. As a fifth year, and somebody like Ryan Coonan, who's probably having his best year ever, is being told, hey, I don't get to finish this out. I mean, that's a tough thing to swallow, let alone I got to swallow it with him and communicate that to him. Do you know what I mean? And no matter the DNCA comes back with a possible reprieve, then that guy's got to decide. That's a different conversation. Do you know what I mean? It's like the moment in time that you're at, that you're saying, hey, this kid's going to end his year and end his season, this team's going to end it along with him. I don't know that I still have a grasp on it. You know, I wake up and I'm just a little numb about it, or, you know, I'm thinking about it. And it's just, it's a tough thing to process right now. And the only thing that's going to help is time. And certainly you get text and you go through stuff and you console those guys. And that's what I tell them. It's like, hey, it's just going to take some time to kind of process all this as we get more information. And you kind of sympathize with them. You know, our plan is our team, and, you know, is like, hey, the school's got to break till the 6th. And we're going to kind of have some conversations, and ultimately this is probably going to get worse before it gets better. And but if I call my guys back for whatever reason and have one last practice and do senior night the right way, that's what I'm going to try and do. I may not be able to do that. It may be a pipe dream, you know, but I certainly want to have a little bit of hope and look at that. And if I can't do it, I can't do it. You know what I mean? And I'll respect that, but, it's tough. I don't know. I have a clear cut answer for you right now. I think I try to give my guys the best information possible, tell them I'm available for them, and kind of work through it from that point.
Actually, you, both touched on the next few set of questions a little bit. I'm going to ask them anyways, just so for whoever's listening and watching can, just track along. But, what was it like communicating that information to your athletes? Like, how was it done? Was it something that's handed to you to personally deliver, or was it just a general blast email from your athletic departments? And how did you handle that?
Well, certainly, like, we met with the guys, like, we had a film session planned, and I told them about the Loyola game. But I mean, they got blasted at the other step before I could even meet with them, you know, with the NCAA coming out. Hey, coach, this being our season's done. And I said, hey, I'm getting more information. I'll let you guys know. And we ended up meeting on Friday again about it and kind of walking through all the steps and kind of what was going on. And I could have kind of done the texting, but I had the ability that they hadn't left yet. And we were getting ready to go play a game. So we met and visited about it and talked about it. And it wasn't easy, like I said. It was just, you got to do it in person if you can. I mean, you got all this social media stuff getting hit by them and things coming out left and right. And I just wanted to talk to them about, you know, they were privileged. We talked about it 3 days ago. It was really weird that they were privileged to be a college volleyball athlete, you know, and how you never know when that's going to change. And, you know, something like this happens. And the next topic of conversation was like, how do they stay healthy, keep their family healthy, keep their friends healthy? And this is some real stuff. This isn't, I mean, I get it. Some people, hey, you're overreacting, but I think this is some real stuff happening that is unprecedented in our timeline, and you got to deal with that responsibility and be smart. And that doesn't mean you don't do anything at all. Do you know what I mean? But you got to have some good awareness about some things. And we talked about how to make sure they were doing some of that stuff.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, no, it was a little different for us. We had Ohio State coming in for Saturday, and Saturday was our alumni event. So we were having all the alumni coming into town, and we were going to have an event afterwards and celebrate them and celebrate our team. And, you know, we found out Thursday morning that we were probably not going to be able to play Ohio State because NJIT had made the notion that they were going to play without fans. And then we got a call basically stating that the match versus Ohio State was going to be canceled. So I had to call Kevin Birch and say, hey, I wish I had better news for you, but unfortunately we're canceling your match. So we went into Thursday's practice knowing that our university was going to extend spring break for another week, and then they were going to be doing online classes. And so Thursday for us, I walked in, I said, hey, here's where we are as of this moment. We're going to have fun today. We're going to have a little doubles tournament and just kind of play around and get loose and just have some fun, put some smiles on our faces. And then at the end, I was going to let them know what the next steps were. And literally at the end of practice, we had not heard anything as of yet. I sent my guys off saying, hey, don't get fat and lazy at home while you're doing spring break. You got to stay in shape because we have practice on the 23rd.
Yeah.
And literally an hour later, we got told that our season was canceled. And, you know, it's a bummer because, A, we really just wanted to continue to compete, which obviously our guys love to do. But we were hosting the national championships, and that was something that we were really excited to do just for the country. You know, it's been 30 years since we've had a chance to do that, and we were real excited and had all these good things in place, and we were ready to go. And regardless if we were in it or not, D.C. was going to be a great atmosphere. And so we are really excited about that, and that's kind of a bummer. And I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to my guys. I didn't get a chance to see them in person. They all kind of went their separate ways, and some went home, and some are still around. But, you know, I got to wait until I get an opportunity to be able to bring them back into a room. I too, did not get to do a senior night. I didn't get to recognize my freshman at the alumni event. And, there's so many left-hanging pieces that you want to be able to kind of tie up to finish your season as best way you can. But, you know, Dan said it best. We were privileged to be able to have this moment, at least to get up to it.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes things are out of our control. And I know a lot of coaches say this, but it's absolutely true. Life is about 10% what happens to you and 90% what you do with it. And as long as we keep all that in perspective, and then there's a lot of people in the world that are a lot worse shaped than we are, if we can keep being safe and keep trying to help other people around us, I think we're going to be in good spots.
It's a good message, Jay. On Saturday, March 14th, the NCAA had announced that they're going to allow a spring athlete relief, which is essentially to give them a year of eligibility back. But how do you feel like that's going to impact the next season?
Super teams!
I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to steal your thunder, Dan, but if you talk about super teams, there could be a few ridiculous teams out there for sure.
I think there's a lot of gray with it. I think, ultimately the NCAA grants this, but institutions have to be in a financial place to do the money part and figure that out. Some are better off than others. Some guys are done with their degrees and want to go on to the next step of their phase of their lives and get into their careers or maybe go play professionally I think a lot of unknowns. And then how does that trickle down with your team? You got incoming freshmen wanting to make an impact, senior wanting to stay. But then you got this other piece that you haven't really dove into. It's like, what about the freshman, sophomore, juniors now that can extend their college career another year? How does that affect the scholarship? Is that still exempt 2 or 3 years down the road? There's a lot of unanswered questions with this where you're like, how is this going to unfold and look like for these teams? And I think you look at the first year and go, okay, maybe a school will exempt the aid that you were given to that kid for the first year and he'll come back. Well, what about the kid who is a junior? Are you going to exempt his aid going into his sixth year or fifth year or whatever that is? And it becomes kind of a really kind of messed up situation. And how does that figure itself out? And so I think you got some things that got to be worked through, not only from an NCAA standpoint, but institutional standpoint. And the tough thing is my institution may look at it totally different than UCLA. UCLA may be like, hey, that freshman in his sixth year or fifth year, we're going to give that same big amount we were giving him. There's no way I'm doing that. You know what I mean? So it just changes the overall landscape of how you're competing for the next 3 or 4 years. And so I don't know. It's great. I think it's the right thing to do. But what does it look like and what pathway are we going down with all this? It will be pretty interesting the next few months of how it develops a little bit. So
I would agree with Dan, and I'll add a couple other things. You know, I get asked by a lot of people, you know, what are you going to allow these kids to come back? Are you going to, you know, are you happy the NCAA do this? And obviously the immediate answer is, gee, I'm glad the NCAA wants to give these kids another chance to do something to finish out their careers the right way. But the devil's in the details. Dan's absolutely correct. Yeah, that's the surface answer. Yeah, we're going to give all these kids their extra year. Let's just use $50,000 a year for school as a base platform for easy math. If you're giving a kid no money, for example, and he gets an opportunity to come back for a fifth year, he's got to pay the $50,000 still. You know, it's not just free school that you get to come to and all of a sudden you're like, oh, the NCAA said I can have this extra year. No, you got to figure out what classes you're going to take. Are you going to live on campus or off? You got money you got to pay. So that being said, and then you got maybe some kids that are on some scholarship money. Well, what about the 4.5 limit? Are we going to allow the 4.5 limit to be exempt for that 1 year? Are you going to do it for 4 years because of the 4-year cycle with the kids that got screwed in the beginning? And then you got these freshmen that have already been given the money from the seniors and are moving on. Do you just take away their money and say, hey, sorry, but we got to pay these kids for an extra year for them to come back? And so I think there's way too many, you know, X factors that come into this to make it an easy answer of, yes, this is great. I don't think there are, but there will be some teams in certain sports that will take advantage of this. And they'll go over and above that amount because they won a championship. I'm not trying to be a doomsday guy here, but there are going to be teams that do that. That's why there's rules and regulations. There are teams that cheat. But the reality is, I would like to think that in the grand scheme of things, the NCAA is going to do the right thing and they're going to make the right decisions. Historically, that's not always been the case. And schools have been kind of left to their own devices. And I know that all of my coaching colleagues around the country want to do the right thing for their kids. If a kid wants to come back, I think coaches will find a way to make it work as best they can without fudging everything, so to speak. And I think most kids, though, I think are going to say, you know what, as a senior, it's time for me to move on. I don't need a sixth year. I need to go on with my life, maybe go make some money or maybe move somewhere and do something else completely different. But that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. Well, we have more to come as we discover the additional issues. And it's a great insight that you guys provide on that side of things. And you know, one of the press conferences that caught my eye over the weekend was Hawaii when they found out the season was canceled. And, you know, Colton Cowell, their senior outside hitter, who's done just phenomenal work in the offseason to get into shape and get ready mentally and physically for the season. It's like, you know what? Well, my road in volleyball ends here. I know that regardless they grant another season, you know, it's time to move on. So, you know, it's sad to see a career end like that for so many athletes. And seeing social media posts that went out over the weekend, it's saddening for sure. And I'm hoping we can see some of that talent back, but you know, in the end, I know that the programs, I'm hoping we can see the best possible teams once we can get back into the show again.
And is it only for seniors that get that, or is it for freshmen as well?
That's why I said it's not. It's for any kid. You know what I mean? So that becomes a really difficult issue. Not the next year, but 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And so it'll be interesting how they mitigate this as you kind of work through it. I think they kind of gave this blanket statement, but I think there's got to be some follow-up with it in terms of, hey, you're at 4.5 and you're using your 4.5. Now you can go to 5.5 or you can go to 6.5 or what can you use and how many years can you go over it? So there's a lot of these kind of unknown gray areas that institutions don't have yet that kind of got to be figured out. And it's not just our sport. Our sport's a small piece. Baseball, yeah. Softball, lacrosse, all the other sports that are kind of falling into this. And so, and most of them, you know, are non-counter sports, I would imagine. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that. So how do those pieces fall in? So it'll be interesting. So I think it's good. But it's got to have some rules and some teeth to it to make sure that, like Jay said, that teams are at least somewhat following some rules. So.
And it's got to be made fast. We don't have a few years for them to deliberate. We've got weeks.
Yep. Well, ironically, as we're speaking here, I just got a update from the ABCA, the suspension of all polls for the 2020 season. So I had to get distracted. You know, I got these notifications all over my laptop. Sorry, I was looking at the side there. Well, you know, I'm first of all, thank you for your contributions to both of you this College Volleyball Weekly season, and would have loved to have gone the full 16 weeks, but as with the rest of the nation.
Hey, what I'd like to do, I'd say we get back together in about 2 or 3 weeks just to do like, where are we at now? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm down.
So, I think it'd be good.
I will still be drinking this delicious drink.
Well, I still have to post all our gag reel content that I have stockpiled in the back. It's mainly random.
Thanks for checking out College Volleyball Weekly on VolleyballMag.com, powered by P1440. Be sure to follow VolleyballMag.com on the web and social media.